You are listening to Sid Weighs In, where Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership, Sidney Finkelstein, shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
This is Sidney Finkelstein, and welcome to another edition of Sid Weighs In. Each time I talk about one of my BBC columns in this podcast and have a guest host, and today I'm very fortunate to have one of my students, Kira O'Brien. Good morning, Kira.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on today.
What have you been up to, Kira?
So I've been surviving the snow in Hanover, but before Tuck, I was actually living abroad for about 13 years, so although I sound American, I am pretty excited to be back in the U.S. here at Tuck, and in particular to listen to the State of the Union address the other day.
That sounds like a very exciting thing to be doing.
Yeah, it's been it's my first time back hearing it while in the country, and I think the State of the Union itself is kind of a pretty interesting phenomenon. So, you know, it reminded me of the Queen's speech every year in the U.K. Got me thinking while I was here at business school. Is this something really that CEOs probably need to be doing? You know, do we need to look at a State of the Union for businesses and the economy as a whole from a business perspective?
State of the Union for CEOs, what a cool idea. Well, let's see. I guess certainly for public companies, you have your quarterly calls, and the CEO, maybe the CFO, are on with analysts talking about it. But that's not exactly a State of the Union. Some companies, maybe many now, will do kind of town halls, open discussion that will be recorded and probably simulcast around the world. But I think actually the discipline of talking about your business, where you are, what you're up to, and sharing that with a broad community of stakeholders is probably a really good thing to do. And if you're not able to do it as a CEO, or you don't want to do that, I think that raises some interesting questions.
No, definitely. And kind of thinking about sort of what came out the other night with President Obama, you know, he was talking a lot about, I think, issues that are kind of near and dear to my heart as a business student, of course. And he was really talking about a lot about middle-class jobs and kind of keeping sustained prosperity with really having those jobs available, which I think gets into a lot of what you're about to talk about in your column. So looking at job security and kind of keeping that top of mind in recent years, it's sort of worth asking, you know, is there really such thing as a safe career, a safe industry anymore?
You know, it would be great if there was, but the world has moved at such a pace, and that's really what I was writing about with my column, which I called "Where Have All the Durable Industries Gone?" U.S. President Barack Obama recently called for a return to an era when workers could have steady jobs and durable industries. The trouble is, there are no more durable occupations that offer long-term job security. What's more, most people would not want to go back to that era. For the age of disruption has created really a lot of benefits that we've become accustomed to and opened up even more opportunities for those willing and able to take advantage. That era came with a catch. To win in the modern economy, one must stop thinking about durable jobs and start becoming a durable talent. Where have all the industries gone? Well, their passing has really been stunning in its speed. New entrants and competitors have changed the rules, innovated, disrupted industry after industry. You make cameras? I'll take mine on my smartphone, 10 megapixels in all. Thank you very much. And while you're at it, let's skip the compact discs for my music collection. Actually, I don't even know if you know, Kira, what a compact disc is, let alone an album. GPS navigation gizmos for my cars, forget about that. And newspaper delivery to my home, how very quaint. So many of these changes have arisen because of the shift from analog to digital and from physical to virtual. Even in my own industry, higher education, massive open online courses, MOOCs, hold the potential for massive disruption, especially to universities that can't differentiate by brand, by research, or by teaching quality. Even tenure for professors is much less common than it used to be. By some accounts, only one-third of university faculty are protected with such job security. If academia can't offer durable jobs, who can? Powerful customers have also emerged to force change in supplier companies, much of it directed toward lowering costs and therefore wages. This is not only about Walmart or Amazon.com. The legal industry, for one, is in turmoil because of precisely this pressure from traditional big company customers who are no longer willing to effectively subsidize the training of young lawyers by paying for their billable hours. Industries that have taken advantage of regulatory-enabled protections are not immune either, although they continue to try to hold on to their positions, not via market strategies, but rather through political strategies. Taxi cabs are one of my favorite examples. Typically regulated and controlled by local government, There are now mobile phone apps that let customers find alternative transportation in a much more convenient fashion. Naturally, taxi companies fight to keep what they have, dominance, rather than fighting to fix massive customer service problems that created the opportunity for a competitor to emerge with a different business model in the first place. By the same token, it will just be a matter of time before the emergence of television available anywhere pushes cable and satellite companies to sell channels a la carte and not bundled. At least I hope that comes soon. Time Warner Cable's recent dust-up over transmission fees with the CBS network in the U.S. may well be the trigger for a fitful move in this direction. Surely one of the most despised of all business practices, it will be even harder to defend when mass-market customers become used to watching individual channels on the Internet via alternative broadband providers. An entire generation of 20-somethings access most of their TV this way already. When this happens, cable and satellite companies will cease to exist in the manner they've become accustomed. They'll have to create a new business model to survive, something opportunistic entrepreneurs at Netflix, Hulu, Google, Apple, Amazon, they've all been working on it for some time. Good luck dealing with that. I can go on with further examples of industries that will never provide the stability they once did, not just because of the technological and customer changes, but also because of global competition that destroys the fat and the lazy, because of the increasing importance of services over manufacturing to the economy, removing many high-paying, steady union jobs in the process, and also because so many of us have become accustomed to almost unlimited choice, making it difficult for any company to maintain steady market share and hence steady jobs. In the end, this means that the only durable industry is yourself. We have no choice but to be durable, since the world around us has become so capricious. Job security is not only an unrealistic goal, it's a foolish one. While we still need to dedicate ourselves to our jobs, there's no alternative to creating value while at work. We no longer need to dedicate ourselves to a single employer. Why? Because that company might not be there for us tomorrow. The skills people need in this world are constant learning, adaptability, open-mindedness, networking, and curiosity. Yes, the more you wonder about why things work the way they do in your industry, the closer you'll be to becoming one of the disruptors. And even if you're not ultimately a disruptor, the mindset of always thinking about what could be different, better, faster, smarter, or even opposite to how things look today brings you quicker to change than the next man or woman. Ironically, President Obama came into office on a wave of change we can believe in. But whatever that change is, it won't be back toward durable industries and durable jobs. Those days are gone. And the sooner we realize it, we'll all be better off.
Great. Well, thank you so much. That was a really interesting column. And, you know, it gets me thinking quite a bit about the how. So for me, I'm always wondering, how do you change? How do you make sure you're that leader who's adaptable? You're that leader who can be open-minded. You're, you know, someone who's going to be able to shift between industries if you need to, in shift between different kinds of jobs. And for me, I think, you know, I've always imagined moving between small and large firms has been one way to kind of grow that skill set and be able to take on any situation. But, you know, maybe there's another way. What do you think?
You know, Kira, open-mindedness or adaptability, agility, it's a muscle, and you got to exercise it. It doesn't just happen by itself. And so you have to go sometimes out of your way to try to make that happen. For example, put yourself out of your comfort zone. And you could do that in all sorts of different ways, from hobbies you're doing, from activities that you're doing, from taking on a new challenge at work, a different challenge. It could also be something as simple as traveling into a place where you haven't been and where you actually have to work. I mean, I could think back to when I had a sabbatical a number of years ago, and I was actually writing one of my books at that time, and we decided we'd move to Paris. Now, that's no hardship, to be sure, but actually having to deal with Paris in around 2000, 2001, the beginning of the Internet era there, the incredible regulatory bureaucracy that was there, the French environment all around you, I found that just those elements actually, believe it or not, boosted my creativity, I thought, in trying to write that book and think about new ideas to share. So I think that's one idea. There are probably others. I think if you're focused on it, if you make this a priority, it could really help. Oh, there's one other thought about that. The person you work for, especially early on in your career, is really, really important. And you want to work for someone who's going to challenge you, who is someone who's going to say, you know, I'm going to push you in a direction. You might not want to do this, but it's going to be good for you. And there's got to be a real risk of failure. Not a lot of people like that, but boy, you go through those exercises, those activities, and you come out a lot stronger.
It makes perfect sense. And, you know, I think it's interesting what you said about that boss that you've once had when you first started. And it makes me think about kind of networking and, you know, knowing the right people to some extent. You know, LinkedIn's built a booming business on the ability to connect different people across jobs and industries, people who have particular interests or particular types of skill set. How much weight do you give to networking?
You know, if we live in a world where no one has a guaranteed job for a long time, you better be ready and prepared for that next job all the time. It's a little unfair and it's a little bit difficult because you want to be 100%, 110% focused on whatever it is you're doing. But I think at the same time, you got to be thinking, am I laying the groundwork for some options down the line when I'm going to need them? The last thing you want is to be in a situation for whatever reason. It doesn't work out. The industry is disrupted. The job doesn't work out. Who knows what it is? And then you have to kind of start from scratch, going back to people that maybe you should have stayed in touch with for a year or two or three. And you know, the problem is the longer you've been in the workforce, the more challenging this is because of reverse age discrimination, if you think about that. People that are in their 50s that are laid off or lose their jobs because of disruption. There's some really talented people that have been managers, CEOs even. It gets very difficult. And I think one of the things that happens is there's a natural tendency to maybe get too comfortable in your job so that you're not spending the time you need to be connecting and contributing in a lot of different ways. So I guess it means we need two jobs, the job we're doing and getting ready for the job we're going to have next.
Well, fantastic. I think I'm going to go hop a flight to Paris, network a little, and let my creative juices flow then.
Enjoy the croissant.
Thanks very much. Bye.
This has been Sid Wazin. If you would like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWazin. Thank you for listening.